Welcome to Go Do Create, a podcast about people that are passionate about the things that they do in their life and the things that they create. I'm your host, Jess Brown. On today's episode, we're going to catch up with my good friend, Jed Bridges. A small little fact about Jed and myself. We used to work together, and we would have these crazy long commutes from North County, San Diego, up to LA with another good friend of ours, Ryan. And there was never a dull moment on those drives, and so many great conversations and stories. And it was really just fun for me to catch up with Jed again. And I'm excited to be able to just share a little bit about his story and the way he thinks and who he is with the rest of you. So here's episode two. Enjoy. Thanks for doing the podcast with me. I appreciate it.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on twice.
You're already a repeat, and the first one never got to air.
I know. Yeah, I like to think that it's kind of my thing. This will be my third podcast I've been on that I was on a previous episode that never aired. I was on the last episode of The Industry. Remember that?
Oh, with Jared Arandu and... Wow, that's a long time ago.
It was so long ago. And I was on the last one, and it never aired. Like, they just never uploaded it, but it was fun.
Who did that with Jared?
It was too good for the internet. With Jared?
Was it just Jared by himself? Because I felt like Drew Wilson maybe had something to do with that.
No, it was Drew and Jared and someone else. Adam Stachowiak.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. He's a... man, I don't know what Adam's doing. I think he's in Austin still. Okay. But yeah, those were kind of the three main hosts at the time. And then I think it sold to someone else. Someone bought The Industry.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know who owns it now.
That's how Drew rolls. Creates amazing products, sells them, does it all over again. Guy's he's a legend.
What's that called?
Profitability that called? Is what that's called.
Oh, a serial entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Speaking of good products, is that the Ugg Monk thermos you got there?
Yeah, the Quinto. This is probably my favorite, by far. It's funny because being that we're quarantined, my daughter isn't going to high school right now, and she hijacked this from me. So she would make herself a full thing of coffee, and then it would last her the first 2 hours because it doesn't get cold. And now that she doesn't leave the house anymore, I finally get to get it back.
Yeah. So you have four kids, one on the way. Mm-hmm. How many of them drink coffee?
Three of the four.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But it's
decaf?
So there's a rule with my kids with this is that they had to learn to like coffee without milk or extra flavors if they were going to drink it. And because I didn't want them just going for sugary drinks. But once they could convince me that they liked real coffee, I allowed them to explore a little bit beyond that. But my son absolutely hates coffee. If we go if we go to a coffee shop, he'll get a hot chocolate or a like a frappe type of a blended something that is 100% milk based. So I don't know, I don't force decaf, but I don't let them have it past 2 o'clock in the afternoon if anybody were to ask. So
that's a good rule. I feel like there's some version of that for design too.
Yeah. Like
just what's the sugar and cream of design that you have to learn to do without?
You know, that's really interesting you say that, because I think about that with, at least in my beginnings of being a designer, there was a lot of awful work that you have to do, like banner ads mm-hmm. and all those things. And I feel like those are the design projects are that are the black coffee. Like if you can make it through a year being that version of a designer or longer and still want to do it, then you've earned the right. It's like a rite of passage almost into those bigger projects and having a little bit more say, but having to learn the all the interesting battles that come with having to design that way, I think is, kind of the black coffee.
Well, I don't know what this says about me and if I'm doing things right or wrong, but I still do banner ads from time to time.
Same, dude. I haven't stopped. Aaron just did a set not too long ago, and he's the first guest on here, but that's part of the humility of being a designer too, is you can't be too mm-hmm. good to do some of those things. But I would imagine maybe even for your sake, you're designer one and lead designer where you're at now. So I would imagine that that type of work comes back mm-hmm. That you think you've graduated from mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah, I think stuff like that, it's easy to look at as grunt work, but it is like something that requires a pretty unique solution. Someone would jump on the chance to design a responsive website or something, but designing a banner is even like more responsive if you think about it. Like a full banner ad campaign, you're going from like 1200 pixels wide to like 200 wide, like 600 tall, the skyscraper size or whatever.
Oh, yep.
that's even harder.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so.
Especially if you take animation.
I just look at it. Yeah. And then you're getting into file size and like, it can't be more than 56K. You're like 56K. But I always think about all the time, why aren't ads responsive? Why aren't they static images and not rendered with code? You know, like that's so weird to me.
Yeah, that we actually do ours with code, where they're HTML5 canvas ones. So they can be a little bit more responsive, but it's mm-hmm. still not as intuitive as it should be, in my opinion. I think there's... But I don't know what those limitations are. I'm a little too far removed from it, I think, at this point to
like if you think about it, you should just be able to make an ad like with HTML and CSS, like just like any other piece of the website. But like HubSpot, for example, you upload an image. I don't know. I could be dating myself. Maybe they have the option for more dynamic ads now.
I think it depends on who you partner with.
Different platforms.
Because I think a lot mm-hmm. of people, at least from what I've seen, are even very successful companies are still running on some version of a WordPress mm-hmm. backend. And I would imagine that's a little bit harder to deploy and constantly maintain an update if you're doing full range dynamic ads. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. I kind of like not knowing.
ad designer or banner designer. I'm going to add that to the LinkedIn.
I'll endorse you for it.
Endorse me, please.
How's life been?
Down that rabbit hole?
We were talking about black coffee. Well, and also Jeff Sheldon's amazing product.
That's right.
The Quinto. So, yeah.
Okay, so my thought on the coffee is I was taking it a slightly different way. I was thinking like the bare bones prototype is the black coffee, and then the cream and sugar is like adding motion and animation and adding transitions and stuff. But I don't know if that model, I don't think that perfectly applies. It's not quite there, but I was taking it a little different way.
Well, I guess you're taking it from the vantage point of the consumer versus the producer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it works. I just took it a different direction sooner, so it felt disconnected.
No one's right. we're just both wrong.
Okay. I'll take that. I should just change the name of the podcast to We're All Wrong and just leave it at that. We can have discussions and then we just agree that everything we talked about was 100% inaccurate and wrong, and we wasted everybody's time. How's life being designer number one and lead designer, and mm-hmm. your all the new skills that you have acquired since you and I used to work together?
Yeah, so we worked together a couple of years ago. Since then, I moved to a company and have been learning a lot, being the only designer and lead designer at the company I work at has definitely stretched me in a lot of ways, and my understanding of what design is and how to deliver it, how to do it well. I'm still learning every day. So one thing I like to think about is, you know, when talking about design, is I like to break it into two categories, which is like the practice of design, you know, which I can do that on my own by myself. And then there's like, I don't know what you would call it, but there's the practice of design, and then there's designing. Mm-hmm. And that's usually with other people, right? So designing versus designing with other people is so different. Like, I can design by myself and it's like, you know, I'm practicing, I'm learning, I'm following each thought from a previous thought and just kind of working through something and problem solving and tweaking and adjusting. And the needs and requirements for designing with other people involved is so different. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy both, actually. I think a lot of people like both, or a lot of people just do one or the other. But being a lead designer and a primary designer, I have to do both. So
yeah,
I would say the practice part of it is something I've always done since I was a kid, and that's continued on. The side I've been learning more on is how do you design with other people, multiple stakeholders on multiple projects at once. You know, we have a pool of, you know, maybe 10 people that work on 5 different products all at the same time. And learning how to communicate across all those different projects with different people is definitely a skill I've been growing in. And I think this isn't a new idea, but the most important thing is probably documentation and communication. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, just one of the biggest things that's come up this week is if there was a meeting and expectations were set and no one wrote any of that stuff down, then was there an expectation set?
Right.
You know what I mean? So learning how to document things in a way that gets it out of one or two or three people's heads and public facing for everyone involved is probably the most important thing I've been learning.
Yeah. How do you think that correlates to being a designer? I mean, that's one thing I hear a lot of with a mm-hmm. lot of people during this journey of going to being designer mm-hmm. number one or any of these things, is the things that they're learning more mm-hmm. is those ability to sell your ideas or communicate better. Mm-hmm. Have you been able to tie those philosophies back to the things that you learned being a designer and the core lessons that you learned at, you know, at design school? Mm-hmm. Or is this a whole new set of tools for you that is just Jed the person versus Jed the designer?
It's not completely new. I know, like, there's a lot of strong feelings about design school out there. I thoroughly enjoyed design college. I learned a lot. I didn't learn a lot the first 2 years, probably, but I learned a lot the last year. Mm-hmm. because the more mature students get, the more they get more freedom, and they get the classes that are more geared towards real world stuff. So I really enjoyed the last year of it. Once you get past all the, here's how to turn on the computer and here's how to open an Excel spreadsheet, and like you literally learn how to use a computer the first month. I had been designing for like 5 years in high school before college, so I had that down, but I get it. They have to cater towards someone showing up day one and needing to start at the beginning. So the last year was awesome. And one thing that's cool about design, the curriculum I took, was part of it is marketing. You have to take marketing classes, not just design classes. So the way it was structured was you take 4 design related classes and 1 more classic type of class, like history or humanities or literature, like something in that realm. So we would have, you know, 4 design classes, typography, photography, and you know, whatever they were. We had Photoshop and Illustrator classes. We had a Dreamweaver class. And there was some more programmatic classes too, and all that. But one of the things I learned in marketing class was selling ideas. Our teacher was named Henry Hakima. He's in San Diego, and he's one of the best instructors I've ever had. He was really good at getting through the bad ideas, getting to the good ones. And for example, he would assign us a client and task us with coming up with 200 ideas for an ad for that client. We would present the 200 ideas to the class, and then he would whittle it down to 1, 2, or maybe 3. We would take those 3 and do 50 more from each of those 3. And then he would do that again. And so I don't like the type of design that is create an overwhelming amount of work, and out of that, something good will happen. I'm not a fan of that type of design for software or interfaces or user experience. I don't think that works like that. But I think the lesson that you can get is, you know, just take it to the other side of the extreme and, you know, soften it out a bit, is your first idea is not going to be the best one. So come up with a couple, and then what I like to do is just show one. And then if it comes up in conversation, be like, oh yeah, I tried that. Here it is. You know, like, so I wouldn't show all of the ideas and iterations, but I think the lesson for me there is, you know, go through them, do them as they come up naturally. Don't have a number goal in mind, but do as many as it takes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you nail it, you know, and then when you're showing your work and trying to communicate those ideas, you know, have the one or maybe two that you want and have reasons why.
Yeah.
And then in conversation and critique, if it comes up, then show the other ones. You know, I found that to work a lot better, because with enormous amount of work presented is an enormous amount of feedback.
Yeah.
And people tend to like to combine ideas. And when you combine ideas, they don't compound into better ideas. They dilute into worse ideas. So that's why I like to not show many, but definitely work through the process and have them. But we've all been there. Yeah. Hey, what if A and B and C mixed into this other thing? And you're just like, oh, cool. Like, you want to take all 3 good ideas and make them 1 terrible. So yeah, there's definitely lessons. That's kind of one of the themes of my career, is trying to take lessons from other mediums and other areas of the industry and apply them to design. I think you need to look to the past and look to other areas of the industry that have been around way longer than digital design.
Yep.
So much longer. I got into like a pretty fiery hot tweet storm one time about print design. Yeah, I know. At Jeb Bridges. But I think it's important for designers to learn print design. I used to tell people, if you want to learn how to make an app, like, design a book. mm-hmm. because it's all this, it's like all the concepts are the same. You have to learn how to have, you know, global styling and layouts. You have to use a grid. You have to learn about rhythm and flow from page to page mm-hmm. or screen to screen, as it were. And you just learn so much. And then at the end of it, you have something physical you can keep forever. You know, it's a lot of the same concepts, readability, contrast, rhythm, proximity. It's like all the same stuff, you know, it's just,
yep.
And it's fun, you know, it's a good exercise to actually try and design other types of things, like, cause you learn so much. Design a t-shirt and screen print it yourself. Like, you'll learn a lot. You'll learn yep. about things that directly apply to digital design. That's why Facebook has the analog lab, right? They have a lab dedicated mm-hmm. to physical mediums, that their designers can experiment in and play with. And that's so cool. I think companies should encourage, more of that physicality. Even if you think of Google material design, like if you watch the origin of material mm-hmm. design video series, it's like we cut out pieces of paper and we got directional lights and we put lights on, you know, and they studied that. Yep. And I think that type of physicality is really, really cool.
Yeah.
Now that type of work is kind of the dream work that everyone wishes they could do and want to do. Most of the day we need to make banner ads, right?
Yeah.
But that type of knowledge and pursuit of learning, it directly applies to everything else. So.
Well, I think that goes back to, is this Jed the individual or is this Jed the designer? Because if it's, if you as a person enjoy creating, the medium doesn't matter mm-hmm. as much. If you are just a creative mm-hmm. person, I still mm-hmm. have, it's under a bunch of paper, but I still have the wallet you made me and I still have the mouse pad that you made me. And that's not technically a design thing. That's a craft thing. And I think there's something I would imagine you had a lot of learnings that you kind of took away from even that, that applied back to the digital world too, of constraints or pliable mm-hmm. material. I'm sure there's just little bits here and there that mm-hmm. you know kind of tie back yep. into philosophies that you've created for yourself. But
yeah. So leather work is something that came up because I found myself in a place like many years ago where all my hobbies were digital, and I found myself working all day on the computer and then working all night on the computer because I enjoy it. I enjoy designing stuff. If I had free time, I would just design something mm-hmm. for fun. And I've always enjoyed it. It's a hobby. It's my work, but it's not necessarily healthy. Right. So one day I thought I need something physical to do with my hands. So right around that time, I was helping my mom clear out some boxes of storage. And I found a box of leather working tools that belonged to like my mom's grandpa, my great grandpa. And they were immigrants from Italy and they moved to New York and opened a tailor shop. So they were making shoes and clothing and stuff. And I had his tools. And when I opened them up, I'd never really done leather work before, but they were still sharp. And like that really like spoke to me of like, wow, like these are so, so sharp. They must have like really cared about what they were doing. Because at this point they hadn't been used in, I don't know how long, but you know, just the fact that they were all organized and sharp, like just that says a lot, you mm-hmm. know? And so I thought, oh, this would be fun to learn. So I started actually by just reading a book. This is how I start something new a lot of the time, even with barbell training, which was a hobby I've been into for a couple of years. I started that with reading a book too. So I got a leather working book and you start with learning how they make leather, mm-hmm. like how they used to make it. I'm talking about like how indigenous people used to make it in pits like hundreds of years ago versus now.
Yep.
They machine wash it with these chemicals and the difference. And So I started there. So, you know, that's something that definitely crosses over, is the way you learn one thing, it grows you in how you can learn anything else, right? So the process of learning is always the same. And you, it's weird, but as you learn new hobbies and skills, you learn how to learn, which is a very good skill in itself, right? So there would probably be more things that apply if skeuomorphism was still so prevalent. Like I actually have a UI app I worked on that was leather. That's not so much the case anymore. Right. But some of the other things obviously are constraints. Mm-hmm. So when I made your wallet, I designed just a wallet out of leather, and setting constraints is important because you are limited to a physical material. So you might only have a certain amount of thickness of leather you need. And if you mess up, number one, that's it. Like, it's very hard to find a match of color and thickness. And then number two, you don't want like the dynamics of a wallet folding, right? You don't want a lot of bulk. So you actually shave off a lot of thickness in certain parts so it lays flat well. And the constraints there are important because with yours, actually, the idea started with, could I make a wallet with just two pieces of leather? Mm-hmm. So that's where the whole design started. It started with a constraint. Wait, yours is two, right? I've made a few different designs. Okay. So that's how it all started. What if I could make a wallet with just two pieces of leather? Up until I made yours, the ones I were doing were three pieces. And so a lot of times, even with digital design, you know, what if this part of the experience was half as long? Or how could we make it where people did it in half the time? Or what if it was just way faster to get through, or, you know, whatever it is. I think starting with those what if statements and just dreaming, like no constraints, just what if whatever, you know, I think that's important because that can lead to really good ideas for whatever you're doing universally.
Yeah, no, that's really good. There was something else that you said in there that made me think about something we talked about in the episode that we don't have, which was the ability to design by yourself or design with other people. So we were talking about how when you're a bass player, you can't really play music by yourself. You have to have somebody accompanying you, either a drummer, a guitarist, but if it's you by yourself, it doesn't really work. But then I've heard from other people, and I did a survey recently of like unpopular opinions, and a really dear friend of me of mine said design is better by yourself. You make a better product by yourself. And without outing that person, they are a multifaceted and very talented individual, where I would say that person would be if it was compared to music, would be the lead singer, songwriter, and guitar player / piano player. And you can do that 100% by yourself. But you do need, you know, to make a really, truly great product, wouldn't it be nice to have a bass player, a drummer, another guitarist, you know, type of thing. I'm just kind of curious, but, you know, with both of those analogies kind of in place, like, what's your experience or thoughts behind creating by yourself versus creating with others? Because I know you've been able to do both numerous times over your career.
Yeah, I think it depends on the goals and the outcomes you're looking for with whatever you're working on. I think it's really hard to say if something is, you know, good or bad, but it's easy to say if it's successful or unsuccessful. Now, designing something successful is very easy by yourself because you are determining success, right? I got into a Twitter conversation. It was not an argument with Bobby Goschel one time. And he had a good point. Like my opinion at the time was, anybody can do good design by themselves in their room on their computer alone. And he was saying his view was, no, you need a market to validate that it was successful or not. Without users involved, you can't be objective about whether it was successful or not. Now, I think he's right there. But I also think that's only if the goal is related to business, right? Mm-hmm. So if the goal is related to business, that's absolutely right. You don't know if your design is good or not without validation from the market. Now, that being said, there's also this third area that's very hard to quantify, where it seems anecdotally that every once in a while, a digital product will surface and appear that everyone universally recognizes as being beautiful and wonderful and great. And always, every time that happens, there was one singular person behind it who had some sort of point of view and direct vision to carry that through. So I guess the short way of saying my answer is, I think it's both. I think I've seen both happen.
Yeah.
I've seen both happen. I think you can have a team of people working on things with other teams and the end result is successful. And then I've also seen it where one person is directly responsible for something like amazing.
Yeah.
Obviously working with other people, but they're able to direct and cast vision and play the band, as it were, mm-hmm. like orchestrate everything without anything getting diluted or suffering. And those people to me are like, I've only met like one or two, and those people to me they have some sort of gift and skill set that I don't think can be taught or learned or anything like that. They just can do it. Yeah. And most of us will never be able to. And I don't even know how to put it into words, but there's been a few times in everyone's, you know, career or design life where they've experienced that moment. And there's always like one singular, strong, opinionated vision behind it. And that's why it was able to get out so clear. Mm-hmm. And so, what's the word? So high quality, undiluted, like, and it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, you know? It's pure.
And what I always like realize this later, why don't I save these things? Like, I never bookmark this stuff. Like, you know, like you almost don't even realize it's happening in the moment. You almost don't even notice that, like, I'm experiencing something incredible right now that's very rare.
Yeah.
And like, and then a year later, you'd be like, what was that thing? Like, I should have, I didn't save it. Like, why didn't I save
that,
it?
That was my, back to music for a second outside of design. That was my first experience with the band, Me Without You. Mm-hmm. And that goes to another part of that. I mean, I don't know how many people know that band, but that's kind of part of it, is they were mm-hmm. such a prolific and very mm-hmm. interesting, unique, really well put together band, but they never got mm-hmm. any reach for me to be able mm-hmm. to say they were a hit or they were really good. It was such a tiny little subculture of a genre that not many people play with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel that same way with, I'm going to butcher how you say it, but like Bon Iver, like when he did mm-hmm. that, I'm so thankful that that actually caught fire and became something in some way, but there was something really beautiful and pure about what was started there. But
we'll talk about singular focus. It was like him locked in a cabin for his debut album, right? No producers. No, like getting feedback from people, like really good musicians. It was just, I mean, I don't know if I know the whole story. I've just heard pieces of it, but he had mono, went and locked himself away and came out with his EP, right? Like it doesn't get any more, any focus than that. And a lot of people I think would consider that like one of his, like a masterpiece in music, you know, because it was so raw and pure and something was in him that had to get out. And if he had gotten it out and then focus grouped it, like, or whatever, you know, would it be as good? I don't know. Maybe he would have made more money, but would the songs be as good? I'm very interested in that, that's a perfect example of one of those moments. You know, they don't happen very often. I was actually trying to put a joke together the other day, but I couldn't quite get it, where I was like trying to relate the sheltering in place at home with that album, you know, like, oh, are there going to be a lot of Bon Iver albums now? Because all the musicians are at home sheltered in place and can't leave.
Well,
they're all stuck.
It makes me think of like the Impressionism era too. Like those pieces mm-hmm. were so personal and so deep and deeply rooted into who those people were and how they saw the world at that point in time. And it's meant so much to everybody that's seen it post that mm-hmm. environment. But maybe that's part of it too, is the difference between creating art and something that is just for consumerism. Yeah. Because a lot of those people, even greats like, you know, Picasso, like sold one painting in their entire living mm-hmm. life. And then, you know, their art became almost priceless after that point. But
There is a strange overlap of those things when it comes to your, like, a personal thing you're working on, or like, say, like your portfolio site, right? Like your own website. Mm-hmm. This is something I've been struggling with, because I just redid mine, and it's kind of both of those things. It's like something you want to be, it is more of a, on the artistic side, I think, where you can make all of these aesthetic decisions, and you're really trying to capture something that says, like, this is me. This is aesthetically communicating the things I value and, you know, that I like and that I think are good. But at the same time, a recruiter has to like it, and has, or you know, if that's the goal. If the goal is to try and showcase your work for other people in a way that could lead to, you know, employment or, you know, whatever, income in some way, you have to consider them too. Mm-hmm. Like you'd be foolish not to, right? So yeah, portfolio sites are kind of a weird mix of those two. Like there's like overlap across the two.
Yeah.
And
I always think of those, you know, as being like the gallery for a private exhibit. It's like you design the ability to take in the rest of your design. So it is commercial in a way,
yeah,
but mm-hmm. also not.
Yeah. And in the feedback process for me, you know, I shared it with you and a few friends that I trust and value their opinion. And I got a lot of really, really good feedback, almost no like bad feedback. I got a lot of actionable things, like I would change this or tweak this or think about doing this differently. And in that moment, it really comes down to like, you know, is that who I am? Is that what I would do?
Mm-hmm.
And most of it was, no, that's not what I would do. I would do it the way I did it, or, you know, but when you're talking about more commercial work, consumer products, it's not what would I do that? Is that something I would do? It's, you know, you really have to become someone else. You have to put yourself in the shoes of another and say, would the customer like that? Is that who they are? Would they value that? Would that make a difference for them? You know, so it's the same process. It's just changing the target of the process, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's actually, I think that's a great place to end this one. if you had one thing to say to people listening around just kind of the myriad of these topics, what would be the one thing you kind of hope that everybody takes away from this?
Well, to designers, I would say just wake up and design every day for 10 years. If you want to be a designer, just do that. And if you do that, you'll do really well. You'll be great. Just practice designing every day for 10 years and you can't not be great. You know, I didn't have any type of success until like year 8.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like,
yep.
But I never thought about stopping either, which was weird, but I was just going to keep doing it forever. But I would just say, keep going. I know there's a lot of people right now that are having a hard time. They're at home, they're depressed. And that's understandable. They're just down, and it's a good time to practice. Mm-hmm. It's a good time to make something. It's a good time to improve. take a moment for honest reflection and find out what your weaknesses are in, like I'm talking about in design, mm-hmm. and put together a curriculum for yourself to improve and get better. Maybe you don't know how to make icons. Well, I have good news for you. A lot of people do, and they've put out a lot of courses on that. And right. This is a great time. This is a great time to work on those things and learn how to learn. So I'll just leave it with that.
Awesome. We will definitely have an official round two of this and go into some other conversations. But I appreciate you, and thank you so much for taking some time out today to talk through some of this. It was great.
Anytime.
All right, man.
Yeah, thanks, Jess. Thanks for having me on.